Welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and today I'm here with Paula Heller. So Paula is a drama therapist, and this is the first opportunity I've ever gotten to actually have a drama therapist on the podcast. So welcome, Paula.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So let's say that I'm someone that's listening to this. I'm like, wait a second, what's a drama therapist? And what's the difference between a drama therapist and maybe another type of therapist? What might you say to them?
Well, I could give them the official drama therapy definition from the North American Drama Therapy website, which is drama therapy is an active experiential approach to facilitating change through storytelling, projective play, purposeful improvisation, and performance. Participants are invited to rehearse desired behaviors, practice being in relationships, expand and find flexibility between the roles, and perform the change they wish to be and see in the world. But usually I just tell them it's sort of a more playful way at figuring things out, gaining insights, working through and processing emotions from different points of view. It's playful.
I love that word, playful, right? Oh, so give me an idea. I know what it looks like if someone is going to go into therapy and they're looking for like cognitive behavioral therapy. You said this is an experiential approach. And I want to highlight that for a second. So you're someone that's listening to this and you're like, wait a second, what does experiential approach means? That means that in session, during the session, we're working on helping you to have a new experience around something. So help me, how might you create this new experience for somebody? Maybe give an example of something that someone may be struggling with and how a drama therapist might approach it.
Okay. Let me think. Well, first of all, experiential just comes from sort of the definition of theater. Theater is defined as an experience between the actors and the audience. So when you go see a play, if it's done well, if it's a good production, you get caught up in that experience even as an audience member. And you sort of live through those characters. And so drama therapy sort of takes that experience into the therapy room. So I think most people think that, oh my gosh, if I do drama therapy, I'm going to have to act or something. But no, you don't have to. There are some groups that do performances that are therapeutic performances based on work. But the real work is done in the process of figuring, I'm saying this poorly, but it's sort of the theatrical process of rehearsal as opposed to the performance. So when you were rehearsing a play, say you're doing a play about somebody that is afraid to fly. They're afraid to get on an airplane. Okay. And so we're going to put together this little, and you don't necessarily write a play, but you'll sort of put together the scenario with the person about, you know, like, why are you afraid to fly? Did something happen to you? Just like you would looking at a character.
Right. So like, what's the backstory? What's the history of this fear that you may have?
Right. Exactly. And then you can sort of look at what is your motivations just in life in general that could be affecting your fear of flying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like some people are motivated by, I used to teach high school. So some kids came to school because their boyfriend or girlfriend was there. Some kids came to school because they want to go to college. Some kids go to school, I don't know, because their parents make them, whatever. And so you kind of figure out sort of the motivating desire for that individual. And so say somebody wants a career where they have to fly. They have a lot of meetings out of town and they're very motivated, I don't know, whatever the career is. And so they have to fly. So then you can use that motivation as sort of a jumping off spot. So you're motivated to fly. So now, like in theater, there's obstacles in the conflict. So what's in your way? You want this job. You want to be able to fly. What are the obstacles in your way? So
the airport is so confusing and there's so many people and like, where do I go? And then like walking onto the plane, standing in line, then I got to find my seat, like all these different things that are like the building up of this moment where I would have to actually get on to the plane and the flight would actually take place.
Right. Exactly. And so, and today with the pandemic, I think of, I'm seeing all sorts of things on the news, like with a fear of flight because of germs and things.
Right.
And fear of flight because of plane crashes and things after 9/11, obviously with the planes and some people are just afraid of plane crashes in general. And so then you work through whatever those obstacles are sort of playfully through scenarios. So you might have them play the role of the stewardess or something. You might have them play the role of the one that's not afraid.
Oh, like how would the stewardess kind of help you through that obstacle? Like that, those kind of type of things? Or
yeah, there might be, you don't know what's going to come up in the play because it's all improvised. But for example, when I was working with a client once, they were afraid to fly. I was thinking of that client when you brought it up. And so as they were playing the stewardess, they were like, well, stewardesses generally are pretty caring people and they want you to be comfortable. And so when the person played the role of the stewardess, all of a sudden she was like, well, you know, it's pretty safe. You know, I can, you know, put you in this seat where you can see me, you know, and, you know, we can make eye contact and, you know, really, she could give her statistics. I can't remember all the different things that she came up with as a stewardess. You know, I think in a playful way, this was an adult. It was also, you know, well, you know, we can have a glass of wine, whatever. Yeah. Not that I want people, you know, with substance issues to necessarily do that. But you just sort of play all these things from the point of view of the stewardess helping the client. And then the client feels, well, you know, a stewardess might be a good resource when I get mm-hmm. to that point that I'm actually getting on the plane, you know.
That makes really good sense. And not only that, like entering into that realm of play and imagination, all of a sudden the possibilities become a lot less restricting, right? If we talk about different things like obstacles, right? Obstacles are limiting forces in our life. So if we're setting up a situation, an imaginary situation that is littered with these different obstacles and we can take on these different roles, all of a sudden those obstacles shift and they become different and we can maybe see things from those other roles that mm-hmm. we wouldn't really be able to see from our own.
In that case, finding safety, mm-hmm. you know, just finding safety through the possibilities, the possibility of safety.
Right. Well, and you're creating a story of success, mm-hmm. right? So often whenever we're left to our own imagination, right, and we're afraid of things or things are challenging, there can be stories of failures. And people that are generally more successful in life, they don't imagine themselves being able to fail. But for us normal people, we might imagine failure as a huge possibility. And the more and more we can craft stories that involve ourselves or people that we feel like we are, and we see that success, we attribute a little bit of that success to ourselves, and it makes like addressing obstacles easier. And I love the storytelling part of it, because storytelling is a huge part of cultures in general, including our culture. So I wonder, like, how often do you guys, now, I don't know if drama therapists would do this or not, how often do you make references to like different like movies or anything like that? And like characters in movies or attributes that, you know, like the classic archetypes may have, as far as like, this is like, you know, this is the hero, this is the villain or anything. Well, what kind of aspects might those play with a drama therapist?
There are a lot of movies. And of course, we're working with people's own narratives a lot, mm-hmm. but movies like Inside Out, that looks at all the different internal parts of ourself, you know, that's, I know IFS, Internal Family Systems, always talks about that movie as well. We call it roles, they call it parts, but it's very similar. There is a movie I've used with some people going through some different traumas, and I'm blanking out on the title, The Horse Whisperer, where he works with the girl that was in the automobile accident where her horse was killed, and I think her friend was killed. It's very big traumas. And somehow he's able to work through the way animals can sort of shake off the trauma and all of that and the different things and rebuilding that trust through animals and so there's a lot of different movies that that I think you could use for examples on narratives that help change perspective, help, I don't know, increase understanding, insight.
I think also that can show resilience.
Yes.
Like in the face of adversity. I think of some of the, I don't know if you call them classics or anything, but like one of the things that kind of comes to mind right away is like Star Wars, right? There's many characters in there that are facing like these overwhelming odds and these crushing things. And you're like, and they're underdogs and they come out on top. And people love underdogs. And if you can kind of like help craft them into that story, into those elements, that is a huge thing. So help me. How easy is it for maybe people to take on some of these roles whenever they're kind of adjusting from their own perspective to someone else's or anything like that?
You made me think of some things while you were talking about the hero's journey. That's huge in drama therapy.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to switch over that way, and hopefully it'll answer your question as well. Okay. One of the things that Robert Landy, who's a pretty well-known drama therapist at NYU, did after 9/11, he was asked to go into the New York elementary school. I forget the name of the school that saw the planes crashing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he went in with role theory, which is sort of the thing that he developed, and the hero's journey. And he took these, they were like third or fourth graders. They were little. There's a video actually online of this. If you look up Robert Landy, 9/11 drama therapy. And he started those kids off as seeds, and he's like, okay, you can get on the floor and be a seed, and you're going to grow into something really tall, because they were working on being really tall and big, you know, because the really tall and big buildings had been knocked down, and we want you to feel really tall and big and empowered. He didn't say all of that exactly to the kids, but he started with seeds, and they could grow into trees that were strong and could withstand the wind and all of that. And he played with them. He played improv games with them where they could like make fun of Osama bin Laden or some of the stuff that was going on at the time. And some of the adults in the building were like, you can't laugh about this. This was terrible. You can't have fun around this. This is awful. But they ended up through all of these games and stuff, building this resilience in these kids so that trauma didn't get stuck, that could be with them forever, as we know, you know, through all the brain research and stuff that we know now. And it was all through this hero's journey where you become your own hero. So he would do superhero things with them and different things. That would just bring them along to this point of resilience, that I am my own, you know, I don't need Superman, I'm my own Wonder Woman, you know, or I'm my own Supergirl, or I'm my own whatever it meant to them. And it really, from all reports, sort of stopped a lot of just the hero. They became their own heroes.
Well, and the wonderful thing about that is so often, and if curious about trauma, we have so many trauma episodes on here so far, but a lot of times what happens with trauma is, like you said, people get stuck. And one of the most impressive things about different types of drama therapies and movement therapies that are involved in actually doing something, is that it helps with that part of us that gets stuck. Right. So let me give you an example. if I get into a terrible car accident where I almost get killed and I was pinned in my car, and maybe whenever I start to have a flashback or something, I freeze up and I feel like I can't move anymore. Incorporating a type of movement type therapy means that my brain, right, as soon as I experience that trauma, it goes back to the moment. So it locks me up. If I'm incorporating movement into that, it helps me move in the current moment, right? Like, so if I'm sitting here talking to you right now and I lock up, but I'm used to just doing a little bit of that movement and just moving around just a little bit, it helps the brain see and understand that this is not that same situation, and it helps it reprogram a different experience. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take away the trauma or traumatic experience, takes away the current response, which is what we really want, right? That's how our brain works through things. And movement is so paramount to that. I mean, so any of you guys that are listening to this that have experienced trauma, and I talk about the freeze response, you know exactly what I'm talking about, where you're like, oh my gosh, I could become paralyzed for a moment. And incorporating different type of movement or drama type therapies that have that as such a central mechanism, we're finding is such an integral and such a key part to helping the body reprocess the trauma, and therefore allowing the brain to do it as well.
Exactly. In theater, I don't know if this is a therapeutic word or not, because I've done a lot of theater as well, but body memory is a big term in theater. And when you are, I taught high school drama, so I worked mainly with young people, but in any kind of theater, you go through a very long rehearsal process before you get to opening night. And people are like, no, I know where I have to move. I don't need to practice that again. But it's like, you do.
Oh, sure.
Practice it over and over and over. And then opening night comes and stage fright hits. And you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, my whole family's right out there. You know, I'm going to freak out, which can be very traumatic. And you walk out on stage and no nerves, because your body knows where to go and what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of went into sort of the drama therapy. Drama therapy is based on drama and theater. And so that body memory is exactly what you're talking about. You know, when you're practicing and role playing and moving through and know what that feels like, your body remembers. What did Bessel van der Kolk say? The body keeps the score.
Right. The
body remembers.
Yeah. And there's so many wonderful stories about people being able to work through that, through some of that the movement type things are so important. And you're exactly right. The body memory, right? The bodily kinesthetics, as far as it being able to, because it will get locked up and part of a traumatic response. And us being able to help unlock our body. Like I think of whenever people have different things like night terrors, and like they're restricted, and it's a terrifying experience, especially whenever your brain wakes up, but your body's not responsive yet. And there's like some paralysis there. And being able to be in a situation where you can experience that freeze and actually experience you moving helps to make it less terrifying in those moments whenever it does show up, which is so, so key. So I know that drama therapy also has a large group component. So the interesting thing is a lot of therapy in general really shies away from group therapy. And I think it's more of a therapist thing. Like usually a lot of therapists are really intimidated or scared of group therapy. It's much more comfortable being in a one-on-one setting because you can have more control over it. Drama therapy does a really great job of pushing that envelope and involving groups where other therapies don't. Can you talk to me a little bit about group work and drama therapy?
I was a teacher, so obviously I worked with a lot of groups, and I also worked in a youth crisis shelter, Youth in Need. Mm-hmm. I guess it's okay to say where I've been. And one of the things that was interesting is when you're, I'll talk about adults also in a minute, but when you're working with kids, there's a lot at stake. If they don't know each other very well and they're in sort of a crisis situation, and it doesn't feel safe to really be vulnerable. And then you come in as a therapist and you're like, oh, you know, we're going to reach these kids and they're going to be sharing their lives. And, you know, and not that everybody thinks it, but of course that's what, you know, would be really wonderful. But what I noticed a lot is through games, people all of a sudden were processing things that they didn't know that they needed to process. Holidays are really tough in that kind of a situation. And you have memories of other holidays when you were maybe with friends and family, and now you're homeless and whatever you're going through. And so I can remember a particular group where the kids weren't having it. We're not doing group today. That's it. We're done. Go away. We're done. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know what? So I just started playing with it. I'm like, what am I going to do? Oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. I don't have a group today. Oh my gosh. And they're looking at you like you're sort of crazy and you're just playful, you know? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I know. One of you can lead the group today. Wouldn't that be wonderful? You know, and of course there's always some kid, yeah, I'll do it, you know, or whatever. So then that kid is leading the group that they're not going to have. And all of a sudden they're harder on the group members than I would have been in charge of the group. And it's like, no, you be quiet. It's not your turn to talk, you know, and this and that. And of course you're making sure nobody's getting harmed throughout all of this. But by the end of that group, what it ended up was, it was just the whole thing of power and control, that when you're a kid, you don't have any power and control really over your life. And it was all about the trauma of not being able to go see fireworks in this particular case on 4th of July. And the administrator saying, no, you can't just wander around, you know, you need to be under, you know, supervision and all this. And all of a sudden, one by one, and you figured out what it was, and then we could all collectively grieve what we were missing.
Right.
You know, and they don't even realize it because you're just going wherever they go.
Right. I love that you said that. So like, we were talking a little bit about this off air. It's like, I do my Dungeons and Dragons therapy group where I'm helping kids learn different social skills and everything. And I just had a meeting before this where I was talking to someone else that was interested in learning more about this group and maybe even possibly doing a group of his own with this. And one of the things that he asked me, he goes, how do you get kids to work on their social skills, their goals? And I told him, I go, oh, that's actually the easiest part. Like, I make two different goals for them at the very beginning. They have input on their goals. And if they're able to accomplish those goals, their character gets cool stuff, right? Or their character gets to do cool things, or they get to level up based on if they accomplish those goals or not. So I never have to fight them over their goals or anything. They want to do their goals. In fact, they let me know if they feel like they didn't get a chance to do their goals, or if I didn't give them a good opportunity. Yeah. Right. And then they learn that they have to create their own opportunity sometimes, because sometimes I'm not going to let them have an opportunity unless they try really hard for it. So they get to have that their own agency in that. And that's what you're giving them in those groups, the agency that they have to work through things the way that they need to. And
it's because it's a game. Mm-hmm. I just think it's fascinating. It's distance. You're playing a game. I can ask for what I need in a game, or I can do this in a game. If it's playful and it's a game, there's not as much at stake, but right. You're still building that body memory for when there is more at stake in a personal situation. They remember when they did whatever they did in Dungeons and Dragons, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it was. And supposedly then that will cross over.
Well, that's what's such a cool thing about trauma therapy in general, is that you're putting a situation where the risk isn't as great. So you're allowing someone to be able to take that baby step or that larger step in the direction that they're actually trying to go, where the risk of failure, if things don't work out, at least it didn't happen in real life. right? Yeah, if we're going back to the flying situation, if things don't happen in this, you know, the made up situation that we had and they didn't get on the plane, oh well, right?
Yeah.
And we can always give it another go. We could try a different angle, or we can introduce a new player, or you know, whatever we need to, or a new role to help see if we can shift that at all. And if it does, if it is successful, someone doesn't, or at least I never had this. I don't know if you've ever had this. Nobody ever comes to you and be like, well, it was just a game, so it doesn't count. Right. Or like it was just, yeah. Or if it was just us making it up, right. Now people are really happy whenever they're able to do that. And like, of course they are. Think about, you know, if anyone's listening to this, it's a parent, think about, you know, how happy and how excited your kid gets whenever they win a game against you that maybe even they know you let them win. They're still really excited about it. Right. There is so much in our ability to imagine, pretend, and create stories around things. And this is just such a natural way to tap into that part. So the groups that you may do, I wonder, do you ever incorporate different roles or anything into your groups like you're talking about with like, hey, this is kind of the situation, or this is the play, or this is the scenario. This is your character. This is your character. This is your character. Let's see how things go. Well, what's that like? I see you shaking your head. What's that like whenever you may run that script?
It's there's so many things you can do with groups with drama therapy. And part of it is you knowing where the group is and how well the members know each other and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But, you can start with things that I think a lot of therapists that work with youth do, like the lifeboat. You know, okay, you're the doctor, you're the lawyer, you're the single mom, you're the this and that, who gets to survive? Only three people can remain on the lifeboat. You know, you've played that probably or heard that. You know, there's things like that. You can also play different roles and do role reversal. You can do activities where you pick who's going to be, like if you are in a more of an established group, somebody may be working out whatever it is, like the airplane thing or whatever. I need to ask my boss for a raise, whatever, like in an
adult. Right.
And so, okay, so I want, and they get to pick, you know, I want you to play my boss. I want you to play his secretary. I want you to play my mom, who's calling me every day, telling me to ask for whatever. And then you can give those characters just like a sentence or a phrase that particular person would say to them. You know, it's like, oh, I'll talk to you later. Don't have time now. I got to run, you know. And somebody, mom might say, well, honey, you know, you deserve respect, you know, and you can give them little voices to play and whatever. But the person who it's their sort of little drama you're playing out directs, and they can even shape you physically, you know, and say, okay, you would always stand a certain way and sort of support you or whatever. And they can see, but what's neat is even after you start that, you can sort of say, okay, now I want you to step out of your own scene, pick somebody else in the group to play you, and they can watch it. Right. And so they're in the role of, they're caught up, you know, we all get caught up in our own stuff, you know, but to actually go on the outside and sort of see it, when you've given them the words and things to do, you're your own witness to your own story. All of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, like a light bulb goes off and I realize, let me try this. And then you can redo the scene. Okay, now we're going to have the boss say this, or now we're going to have the character say this and change. And you can see the empowerment or self-efficacy or whatever sort of grow by the fifth rendition of the scene as it changes when they're playing roles.
Well, and the such a cool thing about that too is the other people that are participating, they're having the role, they're having an experience too. Mm-hmm. So I'm reminded of this. So we said the word yet, like role playing, right? We're on a role, we're playing that role. So a lot of times we as therapists, when we're trained, we do role playing. And whenever I was being trained as a couple, as a marriage therapist, we did a ton of role playing. And role playing is one of those things where at the beginning you're like, oh, I'm not really sure that I like it. And then all of a sudden like a switch flipped and now I love role playing. And it's for, oh yeah, it's for that exact thing that you said. There is like no risk in doing it. Or there's a lot lower risk, I should say. And the cool thing is you get to experience what it's like being in that role, right? So like I get to experience what it's like, you know, if we're role playing a scene and like a, between like a parent and a child, I get to experience what it's like the difference between being that child and that parent, depending on what role that I'm stepping into. And this is so important in our own work that we do, because like you said, we get stuck in our own role. We as human beings, we're not really good at seeing our own selves and how we do things. Like you said, being able to take that step back to bear witness to ourselves, it's so hard for us to be able to do. I mean, a lot of times whenever I'm in session, I'm role playing with kids, I'm playing them, right? I'll play them and then we'll, all right, let's do the role switch. Now you play you and I'll play, you know, X, Y, or Z to help shake that out of them. Mm-hmm. And that is such a powerful thing. I think there's so many type of therapies that don't really utilize that type of thing, right? We are built to play in these different roles, right? It's how our brain is. And we feel like there's certain rules and there's certain guidelines that we have. And only by switching those roles do we sometimes realize that, oh, maybe I have more options than I thought.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking in terms of family therapy, I use reverse role play a lot when I'm doing family sessions. And you'll have, they know what each other sounds like,
yeah.
You know, mimic, and this is how it goes every single time so far in my career. They'll start by really overplaying each other. It's like, no, you can't use your phone after 8 o'clock, you know, and they'll be like, so, you know, da, 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 you know, and then, and, you know, of course the kid that's playing, or the parent that's playing the kid is like, oh mom. And they'll be whiny and super whatever, you know, with this. And then all of a sudden it sort of tones down a little bit and they start having a real conversation from the opposite role. And sometimes it kind of freaks them out a little bit, you know, at first, but once they go through the awkwardness of that, they're really able to see the world and say, you know, oh, you really don't feel like you have any choices in this house, do you? Or you really, you know,
it
really
gives the chance to create that empathy.
Right, exactly.
I think, and sometimes too, I've caught parents in a role where they are still trying to play themselves as the child. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, you know, your kid's telling you that this is the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And you're thinking that that's not true. That's not you playing them, right? That's you playing you. And I think that that's so key sometimes, being able to have them play that other role and to really truly understand that sometimes what your kid may be saying is true for them, and you have to behave in a way that to make that true, right? I was just thinking about this. I know I said this on the podcast before, but I feel like it's so relevant here. You know, I always get parents that are telling me, they're like, why? My kid always just tells me that like their life is so horrible, or their life is awful. And they'll be like, their life is great. Their life is so much better than mine, you know, and like they have so much more, or X, Y, Z, or anything like that. And I'm like, oh, so if your kid is telling you that their life is so horrible and you're telling them that they don't know what they're talking about, their life is great. I feel like if I was in that situation, I'd be pretty upset. Does your kid get upset? They're like, oh yeah, they get really mad. Well, what if that is the worst thing in the world for them, right? What if that is actually the case, right? Well, what if that is their only experience, right? If they're like, my kid's 14 years old, they've only had 14 years on this, you know, on this planet. I was talking to a kid the other day. Yeah, gosh, I felt old for this. You know, he has never had a point in his life where cell phones haven't existed and haven't been able to connect to the internet or do X, Y, Z. And so whenever his phone is taken away, it's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. He's had a phone the majority of his life and constant access to technology. And whenever that's taken away, it is actually a really big deal for him. Whereas a parent that's like, you know, these have only been around for, you know, for me about 20 years. It's like maybe not even a third of my life or something. Well, yeah, it's not as big of a deal then because you've had the majority of your life where this hasn't actually been around. So like, I feel like a lot of times the role playing helps shine and helps like make clear those differences and experiences that are sometimes so hard for us to step into in the moment. And I love how you said that, like, right, we exacerbate the roles whenever like we switch there.
Yeah, Jeff's like, okay, I'm gonna play mom or dad now, and I'm gonna show you what you look like, you know. Yeah,
you're grounded forever.
But that's the processing. I think there are a lot of theater artists and people that do therapeutic kinds of things, because I think theater is therapeutic just in and of itself. But I think one of the differences with working with a drama therapist instead of just in a theater group is that you get to process after you've done a role play or a little skit or whatever it is you're doing, puppets, whatever, you can actually role play. What was it like for you to be told that? What was it like for you to sit there and just no excuse, no, and nobody explained anything to you? Or whatever happened in the improv, and oh, you know, what was it like, you know, to be in it, and what insights did you gain from it? And you don't normally do that in a regular rehearsal for a play. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just looking at, could I see you, hear you, and, you know, whatever. Yeah. But
So I want to really quickly, so like for those of you that hear the word process, Paula did a really good job explaining that, what it looks like whenever we do that. Whenever a therapist is processing something with you, it just means being able to explore your experience with it, and which is super key, right? Think of it as a way of, if I am a professional baseball player and I have a hitting coach that's giving me pointers or tips on things I need to do to adjust my swing or anything like that, they are helping a player process through adjusting so that their skill can be better in hitting, right? They're helping them process through that change. And that's exactly what therapists do, except besides not only with the physical skills, right? It's, we work with the mental exploration of our own human experience and being able to process through and understand and break down, right? And a lot of times, hopefully deepen our experience so that we can reach new understandings with it. So process is super important in therapy and being able just to understand what just happened. Right. That's actually funny. That's not the first time this word's come up. That's the first time I think that I've ever actually defined it though, which I think is super important because people are like, process. Oh yeah. Like this is, yeah, it's a process. And you're like, like a lot of times we mean things a little bit differently whenever we say process than maybe other industries might.
Yeah, no, that was good. I'm stealing that definition of process.
All right. So give me an idea. If I'm someone that's listening to this and I'm like, you know, maybe drama therapy would be a good fit for me. Kind of, what are some of the things that I might be going through, or what are some of the things that really drama therapy maybe help the most with, or create like the most change with?
I guess in developing roles, there's a drama therapy activity that I'm thinking of that might help answer the question, where you take like a floor plan of a theater, or sometimes if people don't know a lot about theater, I might do just a floor plan of a house, and figure out all the different roles you play, from, you know, like mother, daughter, wife, child, those kinds of roles, to caretaker, to victim, to, you know, abused or something that might come up in therapy. And you figure out all these different roles that you play in different areas of your life. And then you can look at, okay, what role would be center stage that everybody can see? And usually that's, you know, a safer role. That's a mask that we wear to work, that we're a professional, we're this and we're that. And then maybe the abused role is, you know, not even in the theater. Maybe it's out in the alley back behind the theater, you know, because it doesn't want to come in yet. And you can sort of place all of these things and figure out what's going on sort of internally, and where your stress is, because the things that are in the dark that you're hiding may be the things that you're really coming to therapy for. You know, I don't want to be afraid to do whatever because I was hurt.
Or it's like those things in the background, or they're messing with the lighting, or they're shutting the curtain whenever they shouldn't, or...
Yeah, that's upstaging me. You know, that role's upstaging me, you know, or, yeah, different things.
What a creative way of solidifying and exploring and helping someone like place tangible limits, or limits isn't the right word. This is the way I think of it. Like, right, whenever we do those scales, when we're like, oh, on a scale 1 to 10, like, you know, how good are you feeling today, or something like that. We're trying to kind of make a numerical value, or we're trying to understand a little more in depth where someone is. That's a really great tool to find out the places or the pieces of someone, the roles that they play, and where exactly they rank them and mm-hmm. they feel them.
And what roles... There can be role deprivation. I think one of the things, if you've been like in a hospital setting and say you've been sick for many, many years, and so you become the sick one. That is your main role. The doctors and the nurses and your family and everybody's taking care of you. And sometimes you'll find that's like the only role that people see because of what they've been through. So then you can help them come up with ways of, well, there are other roles, you know, like what else have you done? You know, well, I read books to the other, I'm thinking of a young adolescent I worked with that was ill. You know, I read books to the other kids, like the younger kids or whatever. And it's like, oh, okay, so you're not just the victim of this disease or the sick one, you're the caretaker. And you can help people discover other roles that they have. And I've worked in prisons, you know, where you're always the prisoner, you know, to a lot of the guards and things. And it's like, but that's not all you do. Again, you know, you're part of this committee, or you're part of this group, or you're the one people come to with their problems, or you're the one that always has an extra towel. I don't know, whatever it is. But you can sort of, well, there's, I think, a danger in drama therapy. The more roles that you have, the healthier that you are, because you can shift roles for different situations. And so if you feel stuck, you know, like the stay-at-home mom that maybe is depressed that wanted a career or something, or the... I can't think of a million examples, but there are, you know, you get stuck in, you know, like with what we
right.
do.
Or the student that wishes they were already out of the house and a professional, or, you know, or the high school kid that wishes that they're this great athlete, but also at the same time, super smart and did well in school, you know.
So you may feel badly that you're not the athlete you want to be. You know, and you can work on that role. You can practice. I mean, unless there's some physical reason that you can't, or you have asthma and you know, whatever. There might be reasons that some roles just aren't going to be super strengthened. But yeah, you can strengthen roles that you feel need to be strengthened. And you can also sort of roll back some roles that you feel like everybody expects me to be the funny one. Well, you know, this isn't funny, you know, and I'm tired. You know, how many times do we hear that? You know, that, you know, people laugh at me and I'm in real pain here, or whatever, you know. And it's like, well, that's not the only role, and you can shift roles. And people in acting, people treat a character, when you're going over like a character analysis, you are who you are in a play, not only because of the words that you say, but because of the way the other characters treat you.
Right.
And so if you don't somehow allow that treatment, or like you don't feel respected by a certain group or whatever, then you can change your role, maybe gain that experience through therapy, and you can make decisions about, you know, do I need to love this person from more of a distance, you know, or this person really is changing the way they're treating me because of the way I'm acting now, you know, or whatever. So it's who you are and the words that you say, but it's also the way other people react to you that maybe is not your truth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. That you get to explore that there's pieces of me that maybe people don't get to see as much, and so they don't really know as much about them. Right. And I think the exploring of the different roles is something that is very emphasized and probably more unique in drama therapy than it is in a lot of other types of therapy. Mm-hmm. And I like the active part that drama therapy can have, right? A lot of times when people think of therapy, it's like, this is just me sitting and talking to a therapist. And drama therapy can be more than that, and is more than that, which is awesome because it introduces creativity, or more creativity opportunity, into the therapeutic process, which is usually only beneficial, right? Because most of us, we aren't always going to get better by just sitting and talking about things.
Right.
It might feel better in the moment, but if you're looking for change, you know, I was thinking about the question that I asked you earlier, and a lot of times when people are experiencing anxiety, there's a certain amount or part or role of them that is stuck. And I feel like this can be such a crucial thing for them, right? Drama therapy is such a crucial thing for anxiety. I know I use parts of it. I'm not trained like you are. I use parts of it like for my Dungeons & Dragons group. But being able to help with fears and anxieties and things that have us stuck and traumas, it's super important. Or even like depression, since depression itself is it's a paralyzing force and a draining force in our body as well. And we don't really have a lot of movement therapies, and there's only really great research that's coming out to support this kind of thing. So I think that we're going to continue. Go ahead.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I think that was a hard question for me to answer, with who would be sort of like the perfect client for drama therapy, or because I think drama is all about being human and how we are in the world and how we relate to other people and things in the world. And so I have done drama therapy with developmentally disabled groups. I have done it with prison groups. I have done drama therapy with mental health groups of different people, various different mental health. I have done drama therapy with people with anxiety, with depression, with trauma. It's hard when people say, who is your clinical population? I don't know sometimes, because the drama therapy does really...
Oh, see, it sounds pretty easy for me. It's people that are tired of being stuck.
Right. I like that.
And, you know, they don't want to be stuck anymore. This is the therapy for them.
Right. Yeah, I like that a lot. I'm going to steal that too.
There you go.
There you go. This is very good for me today, Craig. Thank you.
I wonder, is there anything maybe we haven't touched upon that you feel like maybe important for somebody that's listening to us, whether or not it's someone that's just curious about drama therapy, or if it's another therapist that's listening to this, or maybe even a kind of potential client that may be important for them to know about drama therapy?
One thing that's coming to mind, we were talking about storytelling earlier, and there's actually a drama therapy group on the, I think they're on the East Coast, called Twisting the Plot. And yeah. So based on plot twist, I'd love to bring this to St. Louis, but it's interesting of where, like, stories have a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times the problem is that we don't really know the end. So if you have somebody maybe that was, abused, attacked, whatever, and nobody stopped that, you know, it's a dark alley at night or something, and nobody stopped it, and then they get stuck in that sort of trauma freeze that we were talking about because nobody stopped it. And then they work through whatever they're doing therapeutically, and then they don't realize, but the story didn't end with the attack. The story ended because they got up and they got to the police station or wherever they got. They didn't die.
Right.
So the story wasn't over at the attack. And so a lot of times I think when you're looking at narratives and storytelling, it's like, our story's not over. It's like Alexander Hamilton, the musical, you know, who lives, who dies, who tells our stories. It's like, we can tell our stories.
Right.
We can decide. And I think that comes out a whole lot in all the forms of drama therapy.
Right. Well, and neurobiologically, even that is really important, because trauma starts whenever the stress response occurs during a traumatic experience, and it ends as soon as your body is able to calm down. Mm-hmm. So because of that, a lot of times when we go into a trauma response, we're going back into the most intense parts, and we aren't reminded of us getting through it. Mm-hmm. Right. And the reminding of we got through it and we survived is super crucial.
That's part of that same story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, I love that. Love that name.
I know. I do too. I want to steal it. Yeah, I want to steal it from them. They're friends of mine, or colleagues of mine, but I would love to bring that to St. Louis. Also, with all the stuff with COVID and stuff going on in the schools and all of that, I think a lot about what teachers are going through and kids are going through. And I don't know if teachers are necessarily listening to this podcast, but therapists that work with teachers might be. And I think of, when you think of the brain, the autonomic nervous system, sympathetic nervous system, you know, all of those things that using drama and play, even if you're not necessarily a trained drama therapist, if you just think of the ritual and the structure of drama, that can sort of help whatever is happening, whether you're in school, not in school, whatever, that you're warming. It's people first. You're getting to know that relationship first with people, and what is that structure that you can depend on, even though times are crazy and weird, you know, like having that direct structure, the idea of responding to the instability with stability, that is also something that is sort of like, when you think of drama and rehearsals and theater and all of that, that it seems really artsy, whatever, but it is true, you know, that if you know what to expect and the same thing happens, it gives people less anxiety. It helps soothe some of that.
Right.
You know, how well I said that, but I wanted to make sure that, so there are, there are all sorts of ways in the schools to use this. So as far as like clients and things to do, from bullying to school shootings to getting through the pandemic now, there are all sorts of things that improvisation or puppets with little kids, just that whole storytelling idea of developing those resilient roles in kids, that is a place for drama therapy as well.
Perfect. Perfect. I think that that is important. You know, it's kind of like one of those things where you're like, you know, we're teaching kids all kinds of things in school. Let's add this to it, right? Being able to take into those different roles, identify them, and know the roles that we really want to strengthen mm-hmm. and how to do it. That's a super important skill for just our own view of self, right? Well, Paula, I really appreciate you coming on here today and talking with me about drama therapy and all the wonderful uses of it. I wonder, Paula, if someone's listening to this and they're like, hey, I want to find out maybe more about Paula and the work that she does, or I might want to contact her or anything, how might they be able to reach you?
Well, my office is at Diversified Health and Wellness Center in Kirkwood. It's on Manchester Road. My phone number is 314-649-0655. My email is paula.heller.ma@gmail.com. And I have a personal website and it's just my name, paulaheller.com. paulaheller.com.
Perfect. Again, thank you for being able to come on and talk to us about this. And thank all of you guys for being able to tune in and listen today. And I know that creativity is something that is so cool to hear about. So I hope that you guys are energized by today's conversation like I was. And again, thank you guys for being able to tune in, and we wish you well and to stay safe. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.